Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. We are recording at 4:47 on Wednesday afternoon because Kieran has a theatre appointment, and I am literally half an hour ago got back from Accrington, where, Kieran, we had a delightful time.
Yes, absolutely. It was absolutely fantastic experience. Everybody made us so welcome. Andy Holt was gold dust as far as, you know, as far as a guest was concerned. Funny, engaging, passionate, and what he's done there in terms of building facilities for the club, which, as he rightly points out, you know, can now be used on a regular basis to generate more money to help the club to maintain its position in League One, hopefully push on a little bit further, is the way it should be done. You know, patient, sensible, measured, fantastic venue.
It is. It's just such a shame we can't repeat some of the things that Andy Holt said about Gary Neville in his interview, or indeed about several other people. I remember about 12:15, just as we were leaving, Andy was still in quite deep conversation with somebody from the EFL, and I'm worried that we might have got him into trouble. I'd like to thank Andy Holt for his hospitality, and Dave and Karen as well, and everybody that we met last night. It was so nice to talk to you, and thank you for the presents. We got Berwick Rangers shirts, we got Lego Price of Football Us, we got bottles of wine from Rochdale. My abiding memory, though, is the Baroness taunting me about the size of my overnight bag. So I've got this rather little Bijou. I've got this Bijou early Dex's Midnight Runners type little bag, and the Baroness said, "I've got handbags bigger than that." I said, "Well, I only need,
yes,
I only need
handbags." She certainly got handbags plural, that's for sure.
I said, I only need another pair of pants and socks and a T-shirt and half a bottle of wine in case of emergencies. You don't need a big bag for that. Also, I have to say, it's when I bought a pint at the start of the evening, and I went, £2.50. She went, "Yeah, I'm sorry, it is quite expensive." So I said, £2.50? No, I mean, I drink too much as it is, where it's £7.50 a pint. Imagine living in a place where it's £2.50 a pint. But it was a lovely evening, and we hope to have news very shortly of our next live pod. It's Newsday, Kieran. We will have a couple of questions at the end because we did promise people last night. We didn't get around to all the questions last night, so we do have a couple to add, but it's mainly Newsday. But first, Kieran, you want to add somewhat to our list of wrongs. We did our top five wrongs last night, and we added a late entry, but this is somebody you're particularly unimpressed with and their behaviour this weekend.
Yes, it's a step forward, Pete Winkelmann at MK Dons. The second leg of the playoffs for League One were taking place against Wycombe Wanderers. Now, as we know, Adams Park is a small ground, and they fitted as many people in as they could. MK Dons have a capacity of 30,500 people for their stadium, and it's I've been there as an away fan. It can be an enjoyable experience, especially if you win. But Pete Winkelmann said initially, "Well, we only have to give you 2,000 tickets, Wickham said, well, we'd like 5,000. And he said, no, because you might create some noise. And therefore, you'll take away a wee bit of the home advantage. Now, I must confess, I find this approach spectacularly pathetic, especially if we look to see what's happened in respect to Wycombe Wanderers. They were promoted 2 years ago to the Championship, but the fans didn't see them get promoted because COVID lockdown had just started. So they missed out on that. They had a full season in the Championship, and they didn't get a chance to see their team play because, again, because of the consequences of COVID. And you know, as football fans, we accepted the rules and got on with it. So this was an opportunity. They've had a fantastic season under Gareth Ainsworth, and this was an opportunity for a large number of their fans to go and see a high profile, exciting match. And the degree of pettiness and snidiness from Pete Winkelmann is utterly bewildering, because he gave them 2,000 tickets and then sort of begrudgingly gave them an extra 200, but then stuck the Wickham fans in the upper tier. Mm. So they were further away from the players, and therefore, you know, their support couldn't be heard as much. And he even split the Wickham fan base into different sections so that they couldn't be sort of all united together. So, you know, we talk about fans being the most important people in the game, and you know, all of these clubs were saying, "Oh, yeah, well, this is proof. COVID has proved that without fans, football is nothing." Well, then let the fans go and watch the football.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he's sort of cutting off his nose to spite his face as well, because he's missed out on sort of 3,000 extra fans worth of pints and pies, didn't he, in match day income?
Yeah, it's. I'm just completely bewildered. So yeah, it is self defeating from a financial point of view. MK Dons lost overall, so yeah, you know, they're not going to get that money back. So even with his pettiness, it wasn't enough. But yeah, you do look for leadership. Andy Holt, when we were talking to him last night, he said, "Yeah, when we've got big clubs who come to the Wham Stadium in Accrington, it's great. You know, and we welcome as many as we can." And it's the complete opposite that we're seeing at MK Dons. Yeah, and let's be honest, it's a club which probably needs, it could benefit from making friends within the football community, because there is still a rump of fans who don't like the way that the club has effectively relocated the Golden Share from Wimbledon to is that somebody trying to break in?
It's our next door neighbours and their perpetual DIY quest to get themselves onto Homes Under the Hammer. I think it's more than a rump of fans, Kieran. I think the response last night when we mentioned that Pete Winkelmann is the owner of a club that shouldn't really exist indicates that it's still a sore spot for a lot of football fans. And as you say, MK Dons could do with as much good PR as they can get. We all know, having said that, they do remarkable community stuff. So they are a club that is trying its best, but they're a club that occupies a strange place in the mentality of the supporters of every other club in the country. It was slightly odd at the end. I watched that game live, and slightly odd at the end watching the shaggy-haired Gareth Ainsworth hugging the shaggy-haired Pete Winkelmann. I thought for a moment, I'm watching the big match revisited. My telly seems to have gone back to the 70s. It's really odd. And talking of wrong-uns, Kieran, by an amazing coincidence, one of the wrong-uns we talked about last night, who's very high on your list of wrong-uns historically, turns up in the news today. And that's one Lawrence Bassini, who you confidently predicted last night was probably never going to get involved in football again.
Well, I confidently predicted he'd never be allowed to get involved with football. Well, now, yeah, I'm hoping the EFL will do the decent thing here. For people not familiar with Lawrence Bassini, with two S's, he used to be known as Lawrence Bazzini with a Z or a Z before he went bankrupt. And then he changed his name because, hey, everybody deserves a second chance, which I'm all in favour of. You know, taking risk in business, sometimes things don't work out. I've got absolutely no issue with this. But after going bankrupt...
Can I just interrupt you there? Because I absolutely agree everybody deserves a second chance, but he probably should have changed his name better then, shouldn't he? He's left a little bit of a trail of crumbs there, isn't he, really? It's not going to take a lot of detective work to work out who could this Lawrence Bassini be. We haven't seen anything of Lawrence Bassini for a while, but this bloke's turned up. Lawrence Bassini can't have anything to do with him.
Yes, so he used to be the owner of Watford, and he then ceased to be the owner of Watford and was subject to an EFL three-year ban. And there's some very colourful stories about at one point where he was demanding from the club secretary that that she should open the safe which contained all the cash of the club. Because it's my club and I can do what I want. And she stood up to him. The reasons why he needed that cash in such urgency, we won't discuss on the show because this is a football finance show and not a show of other things. But yeah, since then, he's
although you were, he's you popped were quite, up. Yeah, you were quite happy to discuss it off mic last night with anybody who asked you, Kieran.
Oh, yes.
No one was left speculating. Sorry.
So since then, his name has been linked with Bolton Wanderers when they had financial troubles. At the time, he said that David Sullivan of West Ham would lend him £25 million to buy the club, but that didn't materialise. He's popped up at Charlton. He has been linked with Birmingham City before. And then, lo and behold, in the last 24 hours, there's an article in the Mail to say that Birmingham is certainly up for sale. We are aware of that. Once again, he says, I'm coming in. And again, I'm going to borrow from David Sullivan a £33 million loan on a £35 million purchase. So, yeah, that's quite heavily geared, shall we say, for a club which is losing huge sums of money. And it only made money last year through the sale of Jude Bellingham. But then the article in the paper intimated that if he failed to make the repayments on the due date, and as we know, David Sullivan is involved in an East London football club, Uncle Terry, even from underneath the concrete, his ears will be pricking up. Could this be a job for Uncle T? In terms of collecting the repayments, it looks as if this does go ahead, and I think it highly unlikely. I did speak to a good source in the Midlands. I said, "Do you think this going through?" To which his reply was bollocks, right. Which sort of summed up the position. But and he said that Bassini is just desperate for publicity. So I hope for Birmingham's sake, I don't care how bad things are under the present owners, and I know there's bad feeling, you do not want Lawrence Bassini. Just read the Charlton dossier if you want to read about Bassini's. Mm-hmm. Talk to people at Bolton. Talk to people at Watford. But David Sullivan used to be the owner of Birmingham City. He sold the club for £81 million to a Hong Kong businessman called Carson Young, who subsequently ended up in jail for 6 years for money laundering. So it's a club with an entertaining history, to put it mildly. There's somebody else involved as an alternative bidder called Keith Harris. And I'm thinking, not that Keith Harris. That can't be, surely. I don't think that's that one, but who has been involved with sort of brokerages of clubs before. So that's where we are with Birmingham. Ultimately, it's up to the EFL to look at whether an individual has passed the owners and directors test. But for the sake of football, I hope either this prospective deal proves to be a load of old nonsense, or the EFL are able to find sufficient evidence that keeps Lawrence Bassini away from football, because he is bad news. There are many, many stories from from very, very many reputable people that I know in the sport, which do not reflect well on him.
On the train on the way home from Preston this morning, I got several messages from friends and Palace fans who monitor what Simon Jordan says on TalkSport and often send messages into TalkSport to remind TalkSport that Simon Jordan bankrupted Crystal Palace Football Club. But it seemed that Simon Jordan was saying that this is good news for Birmingham City fans, but only because it's almost inevitable that Bassini would not be able to repay the loan and the club would revert back to David Sullivan, and in which case Birmingham would be in safe hands. But the club couldn't revert back to David Sullivan, could it? And there will be people asking, it's a grey area, but how is it that one of the owners of West Ham United can put up the money for somebody else to buy Birmingham City?
Well, because that's a loan arrangement, and therefore it wouldn't give David Sullivan any executive power in terms of voting for who would be the directors. Yeah, that's the legal position. Now, if you owe somebody £33 million and they suggest that you change the away shirt to pink with orange spots, lo and behold, the away shirt becomes pink with orange spots because you owe him £33 million. But from a legal point of view, you don't have to do that. I think there could be consequences. I think we are probably aware that there is a high chance that when the period of profit share ends, and presently David Gold and David Sullivan at West Ham, if they sell the club, I think it's after June 2023, they keep all the profits, whereas before that, some of the profits go to the council. We've seen Daniel Kretinsky come in from the Czech Republic to buy a significant stake in the club. The rumours are that he's going to extend that and take a controlling interest. So, there could be complications if the two clubs met in a cup competition. Presently, they're not in the same division. They're not even in the same sort of jurisdiction because the EFL is independent of the Premier League. But you're absolutely right. It could get messy. The chances of Lawrence Bassini, based on his history, being able to make the repayments, would appear to be quite remote. Because he's not got a good track record, to put it mildly.
Some big news emerging on the Derby situation this week, Kieran, and some quite harsh words from the potential new buyer for the previous owner.
Yes, so Chris Kirchner is the preferred bidder. His period of exclusivity expired at the end of the season, so which was the 7th of May. And also the administrators' funding. They said they had enough money to pay for the rest of the 21-22 season. Now, that's ended as well. So how are the wages at the end of May going to be paid? We are now sort of reaching squeaky bum time. There could be some loyalty bonuses for players who perhaps could have walked but decided to stay, from my understanding of talking to people at Derby. So the dispute is all to do with the stadium. The stadium was sold by Derby County Football Club, in effect, to another company set up by Morris, the former owner. He did not put the stadium company into administration, which has allowed him to perform the role of puppet master over the course of the last 7 months. Every time we hear the administrators talk, they are sometimes critical of the EFL. They've been critical of Steve Gibson. They've been critical of Wigan Wanderers. They blamed COVID. They've blamed the system. The one person that they've not blamed is Morris himself. Now, that's probably connected, or no, I won't say possibly connected, should we say, with the fact that their fees have to be agreed by the creditors, and the biggest creditor of Derby County is Morris, who he has put money into the club, not denying that. Things are now starting to crystallise. Chris Kirchner doesn't particularly want to have any dealings with him, but I think he did have a meeting over the course of the weekend. Morris wants £20 million plus for the stadium because that will dig him out of a hole, because money is owed to MSD Holdings, who are in for probably around about 24 to 25 million, and they've got personal guarantees from the former owner. I think what's what is likely to happen is that there's going to be pressure put onto Derby City Council to buy the ground and then to lease it to Chris Kirchner. Presumably it would have to be at a fair market rent. It's messy. We had thought that, things have certainly been inching forwards. But Chris Kirchner himself describes this as an impasse. And it's frustrating. Wayne Rooney and the rest of the management team have got a big job on their hands over the course of the summer, because they've effectively got to rebuild from a skeleton position. It's dragging on. The administrators' fees are continuing to drag on, of course, at some fairly healthy rates for them. It's not as good as we'd been hoping for. The administrators have granted a 7-day extension to Chris Kirchner. If that expires next Saturday, what could then happen? There are stories, and I've had these confirmed from, again, people close to Derby, shall we say, that Mike Ashley has not given up interest, and he could be an alternative to Chris Kirchner. I don't think he and Morris get on. I don't think anybody gets on with Morris, apart from the people who decided to grant him a CBE and appoint him as the ambassador for business for Derby. The ambassador for business who has stiffed a load of local suppliers by buying goods and services from them and not paying for them. We're in a messy position.
We live in a strange old world, Kieran, and to nobody's surprise, UEFA have approved the proposed changes to the Champions League.
Yes, they have, but they have rowed back on a couple of things that we've seen. So this appears to be what has been agreed from 2024-25 onwards. We are going to move to a Swiss-style model where there are 36 clubs effectively split into two divisions. And instead of playing 10 games, as was proposed, they're only going to play 8. And we asked the audience at the live show, how many of you want to see more group games in the Champions League? And the response was a universal raspberry. The Champions League is absolutely fantastic at the end of the tournament, but the group games tend to be fairly tedious a lot of the time.
To be fair, Kieran, you were talking to a room full of mainly Accrington, Bury and Sheffield Wednesday fans.
Yes, that's true.
It was slightly outside their area of interest.
True. At present, we are football romantics, remember.
Indeed.
But I thought what was interesting was that a sort of a compromise has been made with regards as to who's going to qualify for the extra four positions. Mm-hmm. Two are going to be given to new countries, in effect. And then two are going to be given to, instead of the clubs with the best coefficients, it's going to be given to the country with the best coefficients over the last 12 months. So if English teams do spectacularly well, and they and Spain have the two best sets of results in 21-22, which they probably would do, then the club finishing fifth in the Premier League would pick up one of those places, and the club finishing fifth in La Liga. But if that club was West Ham, now West Ham would be the beneficiary. Mm. If it was Wolverhampton Wanderers, if it was Palace, so that it is better than it just going to Manchester United because they've got more likes on Instagram, which was broadly what the other policy was. So it's not as extreme as before. At the same time, the bigger clubs will be happy because I think this could become sort of embedded into football, so that we end up with five clubs from the Premier League And we've said, you know, that 6-4 doesn't go, 7-4 doesn't go if Newcastle's wealth allows them to be competitive, but 7-5 is preferable if you're a club owner's if you're a club owner.
Mm. One thing UEFA haven't rode back on, Kieran, is ticket prices for the Champions League final. And those Man City fans that are still upset, dismayed and astonished over what happened last week in the semi-final maybe ought to console themselves with the fact that they are saving themselves a hell of a lot of money.
Yes, the official ticket prices, and I share an office with my mate Chris, who is he's Liverpool through and through, season ticket holder. He applied for a ticket, he didn't have any luck. The official ticket prices are between 60 and 690 euro, but there's not that many that were going for 60 euros. The vast majority of Liverpool fans are going to have to go and pay £125 or more, which is a lot of money. But only 15,600 of those tickets are going to Liverpool and Real Madrid. Some of the tickets are going in the general ballot, and quite a lot of those tickets are going to the football family, i.e. UEFA's sponsors, who will go there. And when you're watching the match on the telly and you're wondering, Why have people disappeared 10 minutes before the end of halftime and taken 15 minutes to wander out? It's those people who are not football fans. They just happen to be sponsors and they're there to schmooze their clients and so on. Mm. So, it's disappointing that so few tickets are going to fans. If you are thinking of going on to the secondary market, I would counsel against it because it's going to be very, very expensive. I went on to some of the scalping websites just before we recorded the show, and I was being quoted $3,500 for a 60 euro ticket. So wow. There's a lot of people there who are trying to benefit from this. If you are a Liverpool fan, I was at the 2018-2019 final, whatever it was, when Liverpool played Real Madrid before, and I watched it. I went to Anfield, and they had the big screens, and it was a great atmosphere. Yeah, it was a shame about the result, but you were still with fellow Liverpool fans. You got to get to see the game. All the alternative is go to Paris and just go to one of the bars and watch it. But paying these thieves $3,500 dollars is scandalous.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and the two clubs involved in that astonishing semi-final last week, Manchester City and Real Madrid, are involved in two astonishing transfer sums this week, aren't they?
They are, and I think this is indicative of how power in football has switched to an extent away from the clubs and towards the players. So first of all, we've got Haaland, whose transfer from Dortmund to Manchester City has been confirmed. He has been banging them in for fun. You would say his market value, you know, must be close to that of Mbappe, but Manchester City have managed to acquire him for 60 million euro, which is what, 51 million quid. So, you know, I've got some, as you know, I've lived most of my life in Manchester. Some of the WhatsApp groups that I'm involved with, some of my United supporting friends have been baiting the City fans, saying, "Well, you know, you've the typical City, trying, you know, just trying to buy yourself some more trophies." To which City fans have responded, "Well, hold on, it's less than you paid for Sancho, Maguire, Pogba, and Fred." So, you know, on that basis, Haaland already looks like a bargain. And the reason why the fee is relatively low is what we are seeing more and more often is that if you are a young player and you're moving to what you don't consider to be, should we say, your destination club, that your representatives will put clauses into contracts which will give you, if you deliver, give you a buyout which makes you a potential beneficiary, in the sense that City are saving a lot of money by buying Haaland for 60 million euro, and therefore that extra money that they've saved will potentially go into his wages. So there have been talk about the level of his remuneration. Again, you know, we hear a lot of rumours, but I don't think City are going to break their pay structure for him. He will be extremely well paid and he will be extremely well incentivized, although Manchester City, as far as I'm aware, aren't one of those clubs that give bonuses for scoring goals or assists, because they say, you know, it's a team sport, and you know, we give bonuses to the team for achievements rather than individuals.
And the Rudiger one to Real Madrid.
Yes, yeah. This is one of the consequences of the sanctions against Chelsea Football Club. They are not allowed to negotiate new contracts with existing members of staff. So Rudiger's contract expires on the 30th of June. Again, if you read, and we do read the press, and we, you know, we talk to people in the game, he quite liked living in London. He was more than happy to, you know, certainly consider a 4-year contract, but Chelsea are not in a position to offer him a contract because, you know, the license for which the club can carry on trading expires on the 31st of May. So, yeah, we are 20 days away from that, and yeah, people are assuming that the Todd Boehly Group is going to successfully put through the deal. But they are not in a position to formally offer a contract to staff or sign or sell players until the government removes that those restrictions, or Roman Abramovich's shares are no longer under his control, which would be the case if the Boehly Group takes over.
Yeah, there's one group of people I feel quite sorry for in the Erling Haaland transfer to Man City, and that's the poor sods at BBC and Sky are going to have to try and interview him post-match, because he does not like being interviewed post-match. He's a surly little fella, isn't he? He just, before he refuses to answer the question, he just gives his big sigh and looks at them as though they've asked him the most stupid thing he's ever heard in his life. So I look forward to seeing that. Redbird Capital Partners, Kieran, are the US investment firm with a minority stake in Liverpool, and they are reportedly interested in buying AC Milan.
Yes, so Redbird Capital own 10% of Fenway Sports Group, who in turn own Liverpool Football Club, and yeah, they've done spectacularly well. They bought the club. Fenway bought the club for 300 million just over a decade ago. They could easily sell it. If Chelsea are worth 2.5 billion, then why, you know, surely Liverpool must be worth the same. They've got a bigger stadium, bigger fan base. Probably the sexiest club in the world at present. Yeah, they, as far as the brand is concerned, so lots of positives there. And it looks like Redbird are doing battle with another company called Investcorp to take over Milan. And the current asking price for Milan is 1.1 billion euro. The reason why Redbird are deemed to be the in the box seat here is that I think they're going to be paying cash as opposed to borrowing to acquire the deal, and I think that will be preferable to all of the parties. So it's indicative of further US investment into European football, because the long-held perception by these investors is that football here is undervalued, because they're constantly comparing it to the value of US sports franchises, which are slightly different beasts in my view.
Well, from the sexiest club in the world, Kieran, to the second sexiest, and Crystal Palace have announced that financial services provider Mukuru is their new sleeve sponsor, and that's not long after announcing with a great fanfare their new sleeve sponsor at the start of the season.
Yes. This is a company that's involved in money transfer, mainly in Africa. And, I've had the pleasure of teaching in Africa and also going on holiday there. And the banking system, especially in rural areas, is very different to what we're used to. So money transfer is something which people there have really embraced. The use of apps, the use of smartphones. So this is one of the larger organizations. I think it's based in Zimbabwe. They said they want to partner with Palace because you've got Zaha, Ivory Coast, Io, Schlupp, Coyote. Many of the players have got history and heritage there, and have got links. And in terms of the value. I know the asking price, and they might have got this. The asking price for the non big six clubs is now around about £1 million for an annual sleeve sponsorship. They don't always get it. They try their best. Apparently, Newcastle United are asking for $7.5 million for sleeve sponsorship for next season, which I think will be an interesting first case study for the Premier League fair value assessors. I think Manchester United get 20 million from Kohler. I think Liverpool are on at least 10 million from, I think it's Expedia and so on. These sponsorships are lucrative. Does this mean that clubs are now going to start to find other parts of the kit on which they can also sew patches? Because it's an opportunity to make money. If we take a look at I think sort of Aussie rules and rugby league and so on, practically every inch of the player's kit is sponsored. We see similar in Formula One. There's nothing wrong with it. I think for old school romantics like you or I, we'd say, well, if that's what the clubs want to do, that's fine. Any chance of doing the kit without any of that on, and we'd be far happier.
There is something wrong with it, Kieran. You only have to look at football kits in France to see what's wrong with it. There's more sponsor than kit, and it's not. You say Palace asked for $1 million. Is that what they got?
We don't know. I'm aware that is the going rate, but I think it will be. I think Palace are in a strong position. As I say this through gritted teeth, you play good football this season, and it's enjoyable to watch as a neutral.
Yeah,
and I'm not a neutral.
Yeah. I'll just leave a pause there while you wait for me to say something nice about Brighton.
No.
One more news story, Kieran, before we catch up with a couple of questions from last night, and it involves Peterborough United, who are going to issue a bond to fans, which will pay 9% interest, but also a 15% bonus if they are promoted to the Championship.
Yes, let's say first of all, we are not financial advisors. We are not equipped. What are you doing by buying this bond? A bond is an IOU. So Peterborough, what they've done is they said to fans, if you put in a minimum of £500, we will pay you back that money in 5 years' time. But in addition to that, each year we are going to pay you 9% interest. And you know, as you rightly said, there'll be a 15% cash bonus should the club be promoted during that period. So yeah, that does sound, on the face of it, very attractive. It must be stressed, this is an unsecured loan. So, you know, the buyer bewares, you know, the person lending the money should be aware of that. I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. I'm not even going to say whether I'm going to buy it or not. But what Peterborough have also done is they've offered perks to fans. So, you know, they vary from lapel badges. If you put in more than £1,000, I think if you put in £20,000, you appear in next season's team photo. Which you know, and if anybody's ever wanted to sit close to Barry Fry, you know, £20,000 buys you that opportunity. And they've promised the money is going into infrastructure. You know, it's not going to be going into you know, into buying sunbeds for the directors to make themselves look gleamingly smart and so on. So it's an interesting one. We've seen similar from Norwich and QPR and Wimbledon. It does look as if clubs are now starting to innovate and to go down alternative routes. You know, if the clubs feel it's cheaper than borrowing from more corporate lenders, where perhaps they would have to give some greater security, you can see why they've done it. And it, you know, it's certainly more money than you can get from sticking in an ISA. But with an ISA, you do have the guarantee of you know, of protection from legislation, in effect.
You remember, Kieran, we talked earlier in the pod about the ghost of Uncle Terry and his ears pricking up. I think if Uncle Terry if Uncle Terry was still alive and living in the Peterborough area, he'd be only too pleased to see people with lapel badges and their picture in the programme identifying them as people wealthy enough to bung in a load of money to a football club. They might as well put their postcode and what time they're out of the house.
Absolutely. Let's get through.
We did promise last night. We had so many questions last night and we simply didn't have time to get through all of them. So we said we'd catch up with a couple, and they're all good questions. But the first one comes from Dave Coyle. And Dave's question is, will stadium infrastructure criteria for promotion up the pyramid become more stringent? And then in brackets says, I guess we need to protect against Icarus syndrome somehow, which the reason I'm interested in this question is we had a couple of people take us to task about looking forward and hoping that Luton might get into the Premier League. And a couple of people said, well, no, they shouldn't get into the Premier League because they can't get enough away fans in there. So therefore, a club that size shouldn't be allowed in. And this idea of Icarus syndrome somehow suggests that you should be discouraging some teams, Accrington Stanley, for example, from even trying to get into the Championship because they won't have enough room to put away fans in. I'm not entirely sure I agree with that.
No, because you know, you should be promoted based on your achievements on the field of play. Hmm. And you know, we've had Bournemouth who were promoted to the Premier League in, what was it, 2013, 2014. You know, they had a good 6 or 7 years there. They've just been promoted back there. They've got a ground with a capacity of 11,000. You and I are old enough, going back many years, to remember Southampton playing at the Dell.
Yeah,
and I remember the first. Yeah, the Dell, it held 15,000 people. And those were the days when you know, there wasn't TV money coming in, but they got there on merit and they stayed there on merit, and I've got nothing but admiration for that. So there are certain infrastructure criteria that have to be satisfied, and we discussed these, I think, on the show last Monday in terms of being compliant for the media in the main. In terms of you know, the thickness of the wires, the size of the press box, catering facilities, and so on. But in terms of seats, those are the rules. And you know, if there is a bun fight for away tickets, then you know, unfortunately, it's just part of the game. If Luton get promoted, and I'll be absolutely delighted if they did, I think it'll be a fantastic story for a club that was, remember, it was docked 30 points, it ended up in the National League, it's come back. You know, we've had their chief executive, Gary Sweet, on the show, and he, again, he was very similar to Andy in that I'm not going to gamble. Yeah, this is the club I support. I'm not going to gamble with its future. Mm-hmm. But what we do have is a sensible, progressive, measured approach to recruitment and retention of players. Their wage budget is tiny compared to other clubs. I think it would be a hell of an achievement. But to then turn around and say, you know, patronisingly pat them on the head and say, oh, well done, guys, but you're not coming up to the Premier League. You're not big enough. I think would be an awful sign. And, yeah, even if they're just there for one season, and I genuinely hope that they're not, but then let the Luton fans have the opportunity to see their team in the Premier League against all these giants of football. And if it's tougher for the away fans, well, yeah, we've just got to go and suck it up.
I suppose that there will be quite a few people who agree with Dave Coyle in this idea of protecting against Icarus syndrome. It's like protecting the fans of those clubs who overreach themselves to try and get into the Premier League. But then every club has got the right to try and get in the Premier League, and it's up to other organisations to make sure they do it responsibly, isn't it?
Yeah, and Luton have not overreached themselves by gambling with the future of the club. That's that type of Icarus syndrome. That's why we have financial fair play to stop new owners coming in thinking that they can simply spaff money in a site, you know, on a bunch of big name players to get themselves promoted and reap the rewards. So there are some checks and balances, but they are all to do with the financial sustainability of the club as opposed to the capacity. Yeah, what happens if you just recruited a bunch of really good players and they've played fantastic and they've got you promoted? Well, why shouldn't those players, you know, because also, you know, we think about things purely through the eyes of fans. If you talk to footballers, they're all football fans as well. And if I was a Luton Town football player, to be denied the ability, to be denied the opportunity to play against, you know, Manchester United, Chelsea, Liverpool, but to be denied the opportunity to go to Anfield and Old Trafford, and you might this might be your one opportunity in your career, because your ground is 500 short in terms of the minimum capacity for the Premier League or whatever the rules are going to introduce. I just think it's really harsh.
Mm. Our next question comes from Mark. Just Mark. No, it sounds like his name's Mark. Just Mark, doesn't it? No, his name just Mark. And I wish I'd got around to asking this question last night, because we did have a couple of people from the EFL at the live show who I hastened to had bought their own tickets and came along. You know enough about producer guy by now that no one gets a comp, whoever they are. But Mark's question, with their existing powers, what can the EFL actually do to stop wrong-uns like Matt Southall getting control of clubs like Rochdale via front companies such as Moreton House?
As part of the rules of the EFL, the ultimate beneficiaries have to be disclosed. Now, the ultimate beneficiaries is that although somebody might be using a front company, you then say, well, who are the directors of that company? If that's another company, what we try to do is that we go through the crumb trail until eventually we find an individual or a group of individuals who are the shareholders. Now, can that be circumvented? Well, yes, it can. Because shareholders are one thing. The other way of putting money into an organisation is through debt. And we were discussing this earlier when we spoke about David Sullivan and Lawrence Bassini in respect of Birmingham City. And I think we can probably name at least one club in the Premier League where we've got a nominal owner. But lots of people think, I think there's somebody behind the throne. I think somebody's pulling his strings on this. But it's difficult to prove from a legal perspective. So the EFL does have powers. And as far as the owners and directors test is concerned, it will say to the prospective owner, A, do you have money to buy the club? And B, can you evidence that you've got sufficient money to run the club for the next couple of years? So that's the due process that they have to go through. Can it be circumvented? Yes, it can, unfortunately. We saw this at Wigan in terms of the way that the system was abused. But There are some checks and balances there. It doesn't matter what rules we have, I'm in favour of the independent regulator, but the independent regulator is not going to prevent the likes of Matt Southall. What we're going to try to do is to make it more difficult for them to get involved, and hopefully, and it's a terrible thing to say, hopefully they'll just bugger off and they'll go and find another industry on which to abuse, because football's just becomes too awkward for them. So that's where we are. It's a tricky job. The EFL are in an awkward position because people, I think, still fall into this trap thinking that the people at the EFL make up the rules. They don't. Mm. They are the administrators. They are not the executive. It is the club owners who vote on the rules in terms of to whom can they sell the club. And there's an element of turkeys not voting for Christmas. If you make the rules really difficult for somebody to buy a football club and you're an existing club owner, you think, hold on, a couple of years' time, I was thinking of sacking this off. And now, who's going to go? I'm going to struggle to find somebody to buy it from me. So why make the rules so difficult that you can't actually sell the club?
Kieran, I'm going to make this next one our last question. I'll save the others for Monday's pub because there is the mother and father of all thunderstorms heading towards my house.
Right.
Which I think might affect our reception. We had a lot of Sheffield Wednesday fans in, and we spoke to them about the situation at Sheffield Wednesday, and I thought it was only fair to let Sheffield Wednesday fans across the globe listening to the pod know what you felt. And this question comes from Miles Hush, and it's typical of what Sheffield Wednesday fans were asking us. And basically it's how will Monday's defeat for the Owls in the playoffs impact on the already poor finances at Hillsborough?
We did meet a few Wednesday arts yesterday, and you can understand their sort of somewhat depressed air, because losing in the playoffs is such a kick in the teeth. Wednesday have been losing £500,000 a week for too long, and that's a real challenge. That they are reliant upon Delphon Chancery, the owner, to subsidise those losses. The biggest issue in terms of having another season in League One is that you are automatically £6 million down on day one in terms of TV money alone from being in the Championship. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough division to get out of next season because Derby County have been relegated. You've still got Ipswich there. You're going to have one of Sunderland and Wickham there as well. And Sunderland are without doubt a massive club. Wickham are a really astute club in the way that they are run, and I think they've got a management and a coaching system which makes them really competitive. So there's no guarantee of Wednesday getting out next year, and the likes of Portsmouth and so on will be wanting to push on as well. So it's going to be tough. I think they're going to have to look at the wage budget for next season because they still have some players on Championship wages in League One. And under the rules, you shouldn't really be spending more than 60% of your revenue on wages. And at present, Sheffield Wednesday are considerably higher than that. So a season of retrenchment, I think it will be next season.
Yeah, Kieran, I'm definitely going to make that the last question because Smudge, it's her dinner time. Get off the keyboard. I know it's dinner time. Jesus Christ, there's wet cat prints all over the place now. How's Finlay, by the way? Is he all right being looked after by a babysitter last night?
Yes, he's we've had various photographs of him sort of in ponds and God knows what else, looking suitably relaxed.
Thank you to everybody who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to join them and make a small monthly contribution to our always free-to-air pod, then that would be very kind of you. And you can go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, thanks everybody for coming yesterday. I'd just like to reiterate what Kevin said, and the hospitality we had from everybody at Accrington Stanley just blew our socks off. What a fantastic place, and we wish you nothing but good in the future. If you want to support the club, so if you want to support the pod through Patreon, that's one vehicle of doing so. That's absolutely fantastic, and you get our undying love, and it's anything we can do for you. If only everybody needs a spreadsheet number or two, you know who to contact. Don't you? If you're a Patreon members, you can also show us some support by going onto your podcast app and just giving us a bit of good karma. If you can give us a review, give us 5 stars, that'll be absolutely fantastic. It doesn't matter what you say. You could even say you'd rather have the show presented by Andy Holt and Tracy Crouch, who possibly are my two favourite people on the planet at present, and I subscribe to that like a shot, and I think we could have the biggest love in the history of football finance.
Oh my God, how unnecessary would I become in your life if Andy Holt and Tracy Crouch were in it as well? Bye, everybody.
Bye. The Price of Football. Price of Football.